Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 2, 11, Episode 1 of Dirt Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It is Monday, November 15th, 2021, which of course means that it is National Clean Out Your Refrigerator Day.
Yep.
We all observe, right? That's.
I have some shit in my refrigerator. That's a good reminder, actually. I got some sausages I got at the butcher shop. I may need to check on.
Some vintage. I hear 2018 was a good year for sausages.
Yeah, exactly. For a Salvadoran style chorizo.
My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Jack O'Brien. The Daily Zeitgeist Treat. Because I'm in San Francisco. Christy Yamaguchi Maine is a pro. He writes to he's geolocating me with the AKs, this motherfucker. Mm. Well, I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
I was listening to Puff Daddy's No Way Out over the weekend, so in honor of that, I'm hitting you with Listeners Vanaki. I wanna be your podcast chulo, can't you see? If eps aren't there, then just reload. Hot takes on my stilo. Yo necesito reviews aquí. Ooh. So shout out to me. That album never gets old. Because I'm constantly living in that era.
That was also good. We haven't asked people to rate and review us, I think, since before the pandemic.
We're slipping.
Yo, rate and review
Please
us.
We can
use your reviews. Well, speaking of reviews, the reviews are in for our guest in our third seat, and they are boffo. They are rave. We are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a truly hilarious stand-up comedian you've seen on Last Comic Standing, Tiffany Haddish Presents, They Ready, and her new hour special on HBO Max, yeah. Fighting Words, is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Our listeners, you guys are really going to love it. Go watch that shit now. Please welcome the brilliant, the super fucking funny, Ida Rodriguez!
And they said my name right. I have some kale in my refrigerator that I never juice. You know how you buy the kale?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm gonna juice this week, and then every week, you're like, right. And it smells so bad.
Right. And then you have to look at those sad leaves, and you're like, where did I go wrong?
Yeah.
Ida, thank you so much for coming on the show. Honestly, I was telling you before we went on, and listeners as well, Fighting Words, such a fucking good special. I can't tell you how much I recommend it. The jokes are fantastic. The insight is amazing. It's heartfelt. Yeah. Thank you. That's the first thing I'll say is thank you, Ida. That was such a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's been really like refreshing to have so many men say, hey, I see you. I thought your special was good, because there's so much sexism in comedy. And, you know, like, people already think that women aren't funny. A lot of people say it out loud. They'll say to me, like, I don't really think women are funny, but I like you. And I'm like, oh, that's a bad
thing. Wow. I don't know. Thanks. Yeah. It's your delivery. It's like, as a West Coaster, I've always had a love for New York, especially. And I think there's your energy, that New York energy too. There's just every single thing. I'm like, I fucking love it. I love this. I love also just like you even coming to grips with being Dominican and Puerto Rican. Like, I feel that as a biracial person, like, do I feel Black? Do I feel Japanese? And there's just so many things that I feel like that resonate with fucking anybody. And if you like comedy, bonus, because the shit is funny from the jump. So yes.
Again, yeah.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
And thanks for joining us at what is, I think, probably a very, very busy time. You were saying you had your LA premiere last week. You got your New York premiere coming up.
Yeah.
What's that experience been like?
It's new. You know, I'm used to going to the premieres and people like moving me away out the way so that a bigger person can take pictures. They were like, you're in the way. We've been cast out the way. I remember I was on the red carpet behind Britney Spears one time and it was like, they thought I was her, the help. Like, they were like, yeah, she's supposed to be holding her bag or something. Like, what's standing there? So it's just been overwhelming. I didn't know how much they were going to celebrate me. I didn't realize how big my premiere was actually going to be. It was really just overwhelming because, you know, I have imposter syndrome. I'm honest about it. And I was like, that's for me. Y'all spent all this money on me. Y'all sure y'all want to do this?
Right. You're like looking at the step and repeat. You're like, Ida Rodriguez. That's me. They're like, yes, it's your special.
My name. I broke down crying at one point. I was like, they really did this dude. It was just, I was like the meme. Like, I was like, oh my right. God, they got it. It's been very positive hearing feedback from people like yourself who have had the struggle with having to understand what their identity really is. You know, people who are tired of performative activism, people, yeah, all kinds of people just talking to me. Yeah. People who love animals that were like, yo, like, I'm so glad you spoke up for the animals. And I was like, something for everybody.
Right.
There you go.
Truly.
Well, totally well deserved. And we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of things we're talking about. People are apparently quitting to find meaningful work, but we're going to talk about that. It's a complicated sort of dynamic where in America, people feel defined by their jobs. They feel a need to define themselves by their jobs. So just that's a balance that people are dealing with. We're going to talk about the January 6th snowflakes who are like rhetorically saying they want to go to Gitmo, but they don't want to go to Gitmo. But they're
not even built for Americans yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about American kids not knowing where food comes from. So, you know, just good news in general about our schools, all of that, plenty more. But first, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
So I honestly, my friend Gadiel Del Orbe, who opens for me, is a comedian too and an influencer, invited me to go get Dominican sushi in New York yesterday. And I had no idea what that was. Mm. So I Googled it and we went to this place called Mama Sushi's and they had you know what it is? Like they had these rolls that have like the white cheese that Dominicans have, plantain, like meat, like it was like an experience. So, but before I went, I did Google it to see what that was.
I only know about it from listening to Desus and Meryl all the time because Meryl always talks about the Mama Sushi on Dykeman, and it's been a thing in my head. But I'm curious. Did you? Is it, what was it like? Was it good?
It was delicious. Like okay. They had this seafood roll that was actually, and I love sushi. I mean, I went to Japan so I could have real sushi because I want to try the like real sushi.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't have a choice. Like, you know, Americans, you know, have they have a way of ruining other people's cultural stuff. Like, but we sit there and the fishermen go get that sushi and they tell you what you're going to eat. Eat it. That was like the ultimate sushi experience for me. But that, it was good. It was such this fusion of like two of my favorite foods. I love Japanese food. I love sushi more than any other, you know, food outside of like Puerto Rican and Dominican food. Everybody knows that. And I love Dominican food. Sorry to my Puerto Ricans, but Dominican food is delicious. So the fusion of those two, it was awesome. I mean, it was just delicious.
Like, I mean, I'm not as up on Dominican food. So what was the most Dominican, but I'm very familiar with sushi. So what was like the thing that was combining the most Dominican menu item or flavor with sushi?
El Monstro. It's called the Monster. El Monstro. Okay. It had like plantain, the white fried cheese that they use for Dominican breakfast for food, but just this, it had beef in it, had chicken in it. I'm not a meat eater, but I was like, I gotta taste this. It was so good.
Restaurants that name their food like their roller coasters at like Six Flags, like Monster. Get ready to eat the fucking monster. There's a sushi burrito place truck out in LA that has like these massive sushi burrito. It's honestly a little much. Like I had to stop eating sushi for a couple months after I had them because it was just like too much of a good thing, but their burritos are like named the Batman and the Superman and like shit. Like it feels like you're at a theme park or something, right? Which I respect.
It's an experience,
right? Yeah, because listing the ingredients isn't enough.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I like salmon, but can you call it like something more mythological for me to really wrap my head around?
I want that Zeus. Let me get
Zeus. You know, that's good.
Yeah.
Zeus is like he's like the top one.
Yeah. What's something you think is overrated?
Oh, the Kardashians. I think they're overrated. Yeah, I think they're overrated. you know, it's funny. It's like, they're always like, we're just people. Let us live our lives. And then they're like, by the way, I went and got coffee by myself today. Right. I'm like, yeah, I think that's just so funny. I think they're overrated, you know, and I think they're toxic. That I don't want to call them toxic, but I think the celebrity worship around them is toxic, and it really harms young women and young men and young non-binary people, like, into believing the superficial stuff, because they don't get to see the behind the scenes, and they don't get to see them without makeup, and they don't get to see them in real life, because everything is curated. So I think they're overrated, and that's not to diss them, but I think that what's happening around them is overrated, and it's very harmful to young people.
Right. Yeah. The institution of Kardashians. Mm-hmm. There was a study about how there's like that account, like Rich Kids of Instagram. That's just like these like young people just doing the fucking most on private jets and things like that. And there was like a study being like, this is actually really bad too, because it's putting at the top for like younger people the idea that you want to be flying on P jets and in like massive, you know, being in a big ass truck, or all these really stupid lifestyle indicators, which are completely antithetical to us having a, you know, livable planet. But it's interesting just how even then, like, people are sort of like, let's see, we got to start fucking poking holes in this shit.
Yeah.
They should be reading books that were written by, what's his name? Kurt Vonnegut. The other thing that it does is, like, for someone like me, that comes from where I come from, it entices people who are struggling and poor to go seek you out and try to rob you. And if you watch what's happening in LA, and it's been happening, when they say the poor will eat the rich, it's like, y'all keep flashing all this stuff. I'm not trying to shame you for it, but I'm just letting you know that there are some people really struggling, and they're really hungry, and they're desperate, and they don't know how to process their feelings. And, you know, they might meet you on that jetway one day and snatch your purse.
So most Def said, harder you flash, harder you get flashed on.
Yep, facts.
Everyone, like, I don't think I have seen a exercise of celebrity influence like I have seen since the Kardashians became famous, and then everybody started to look like them. Like, it was almost like physically, like, they just, like, everything started just, like, on average, the average human being in America, definitely in LA, started looking like they could be a part of that family. I was like, there's definitely been influential celebrities. I'm sure, like, when the Beatles got famous, like, people started rocking their haircuts. But, like, this, it's just everything. It almost defies physics how much people are starting to look like them.
And just to yearn for that, like, that visual presentation of, like, whether it's what you're wearing or just the lifestyle you're living, like, in general, like, completely changed the trajectory of, like, this is the thing that you should aspire to now, fully, everybody.
Right. Yeah. You know what's funny? I was one of those girls, still am. If you look in that corner over there, you'll see, like, an assortment of Jordans, right? Because I was one of those, always have been like a sneakerhead, and always been a girl who likes to rock my, you know, that round the way girl look. That's always been, you know, my sensibility. I like to wear dresses and be feminine, but I also really enjoy, you know, that. And when I was younger, I remember that I would be the girl that got the attention because I was dressed like that. And everybody else, like, would have on, you know, we're going to a football game. And my friends got on heels and makeup. And I'm like, you want to do that? Dope Campbell? Like, you know, you got to walk up all these stairs. And then I'd be the one with the Jordans and a cap and a t-shirt, and the dudes will always step to me, and my friends will be like, I wore all this. I did all this. Now it's the other way around.
Right.
Now it's, even when you have on a baseball cap, you still have this filtered look. And I just think it's so unfortunate to feel the pressure to look a certain way when you don't even look like that in real life. Like, you know, like, you could do all of that. What happens behind the scenes? So I just think it's so much pressure to put young people, you know, feeling like they got to be rich, they got to be beautiful, they got to be thin, they have to be everything, and they only have a certain amount of time to achieve that. Like, and that's it's really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is what's something you think is underrated?
What I think is underrated is spicy tuna on a rice cake.
All right. The favorite. I mean,
is in LA. In LA.
Yeah, I feel like I think that's like one of the first dishes people start like flexing on people when they like, if they're transplants to LA, they're like, you know, had to get that crispy rice, spicy tuna, you know, like that's like, and for me, it's funny because growing up in like Japan and also over here in LA, I was like, my mom would be like, that's, you know, looking at American sushi or like, cause even again, I know Nobu really created that. So not to say he's not Japanese, but it would always be like, that's not traditional sushi.
That's
abomination shit. And then cut to my mom going to a restaurant. She's like, I love this actually. This is one of my favorite dishes.
Right.
It's delicious. You know, the thing about it is, I'll tell you why I love it and why I'm Puerto Rican and Dominican with a Cuban stepfather. I grew up eating rice every day of my life. Mm-hmm. Every day of my life. My mom, she would make spaghetti and there would be rice to go with it. Like every it was just, that is like a straight up Caribbean Latin person. So you put rice and I told you my two favorite foods, and then you put spicy tuna.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I love my favorite thing is it's to eat some just albacore, but I love spicy tuna on rice cake.
Yeah. Oh, so good. That just made me hungry. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll all go shovel down some spicy tuna on rice cakes. Yeah, and we'll be right back. And we're back. So the big news in the mainstream media is more people are quitting than ever before. There's more unemployed people than ever before. The great resignation is upon us. What is happening? And so there's a couple things happening. One trend that people are kind of starting to document is that people seem, especially young people, seem less likely to just do a job because it's a job. They're more likely to kind of want to follow their passion. It's funny. You highlighted this article for us, Miles, that where this study calls it what I call the passion principle, the prioritization of fulfilling work, even at the expense of job security or a decent salary. So they've like managed to laboratoryize just people doing what they love.
Yeah, not mimicking like our parents or grandparents who are like, I worked myself into bone dust just to keep things working. And you're like, I don't know if that's for me. But yeah, this is like, you know, again, that's not new. I think for the longest time, we've heard things like, you got to follow your passion, man. If you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And that is true to a certain extent. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to indicate through certain studies, like with interviewing college students or career coaches, found that over 75% of college educated workers believe that passion is like really important in making a decision, like when it comes to what kind of career should I take. And 67% of them say that they would prioritize meaningful work over job stability, high wages, and work-life balance. And I think on a certain level, that made sense for, I don't know, when I graduated in fucking 2007, I walked into a fucking recession and I'm like, the fuck? Okay. I don't know what the fuck I thought I knew what I wanted to do, but now I really have no fucking idea what I want to do. And I think that forced me into a moment of truly thinking of like, well, right now, not many things are an option. So maybe let's take this time to figure out what is, you know, something that really energizes you. And I think the idea being that, like, if you like what you do, then you won't feel like you're just, you know, going day in, day out and wasting parts of your life by just toiling. But the thing that's really interesting about that is that idea of following your passion works to a certain extent, right? It's probably working for people who either have some family that they can support, that can support them through a career transition, or just in general, if there are social safety nets. This was an interesting statistic that said when working class college graduates pursue their passion, they are about twice as likely as wealthier passion seekers. Interesting description. To later end up in unstable, low-paid work far outside that passion.
Yeah. Right.
So there's a lot of, you know, social safety net, career things sort of tied up into everything that's happening at the moment.
I also think there's collective trauma from the last couple of years. And people, I can imagine that there weren't some people who were like, oh, I make a better living getting unemployment than I do doing this job. And now I'm going out and risking my life. And they don't care about me because I'm not worthy of healthcare. And so I can imagine that people had you know, the facing your mortality the way we did in the last couple of years, where people don't give enough credit for that, people were probably like, yeah, I'm and it's not like coronavirus has disappeared. It's not like COVID is still not here. So I can't imagine that people, knowing how many people passed away, and it was just like a brush of this group of people that are just gone now, that people are like reevaluating quality of life.
Yeah.
I think like that kind of goes to the other point that they're making, that, you know, in America, especially, we tend to, like, the first thing people ask someone is like, what do you do? And then like that defines like how you think of that person, or it defines how you think of yourself. Like, you feel a certain way about having a job, or like talking to somebody and not feeling great about your job more than other countries. And so I think that that's another implication of this study, is that it's okay to not have a cool sounding job if you're able to, you know, have a good work life balance and take care of yourself and the people that you care about, and then pursue the shit that you love, like when your job that respects boundaries like allows you to.
Yeah.
You know what? I gotta say this because it's burning inside of me. I don't know where I was gonna say it, but I need to say it. So there's a shortage of Santa Claus, right? There is a shortage of Santa Claus throughout the country, because the people who dress up like Santa Claus do not want to get COVID. They don't want little kids who are not vaccinated sitting on their laps, right? Mm. I thought it was because they don't want to get in trouble for, you know, other reasons, but it was it was because of that. But I think it's interesting because a lot of the people who believe in Santa Claus, that, you know, don't, they want you to say Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays, tend to be affiliated with this ideology that COVID vaccinations are not necessary, that we shouldn't be wearing masks. But it's just a lot of it is performative, because everybody is going to protect their own hide. And so now you got a whole bunch of Santa Clauses that are not dressing up and not going out because they don't want to get COVID. But I'm like, I thought COVID wasn't real, son. Yeah.
You're right. It's real, and I'm shook. That's why I wanted to do it.
I do think, though, that like having a generation or just a populace like after the pandemic that is less likely to be interested in doing like kind of bone grinding miles, as you put it, work and like soul deadening work, like that is going to have a fundamental impact on like one of the big things that ties into job like satisfaction is like feeling like you're doing something. And we talked last month about like studies that have shown that, like, you know, up to like 40% to like most jobs in the American economy are just bullshit jobs. They're like make work jobs that like allow people to have a job managing other people. And that's like basically why those jobs exist. Like the longer I've spent working in the American economy, the more I've realized that that seems to be at least half of jobs is just like bullshit make work jobs, like in a lot of cases.
Make other people rich jobs.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
And that's like the other thing that this article in The Atlantic points out too, is like, you know, employers love when they can find people who say they love their job, because that means they can squeeze more out of you. And that's sort of like, they're like, dude, and that was sort of like the thrust of this, is like, don't fall into this pit of like, I love my job, because it's not all, you're not always work. You're most of the time, I would say 99% of us aren't working for us. We're working to make someone else a lot of money. And like to the idea of like what it means to work and just like these bone grinding jobs, like I even think about even guilt I would have about being like, is my job hard enough? You know, like, am I, because I look at the examples of jobs my family has had through the generations, and I'm like, dude, I bet my grandmother's fucking laughing at me. She's like, oh, you a podcaster? How far did you go to get water? And I'm like, what? It came out the sink? And there's a lot of, and I think there, again, because of the idea of your job being wrapped in your identity, it really is insidious, which is why, like, you know, people are pivoting to things like, actually, the things that matter to me isn't necessarily saying, I do X for a living, rather than I have a thing. Look, I know I have to work because that's how capitalism is, or else I will be homeless and starving. So let me find something that actually gives me the freedom to do the shit that I actually like to do. And I don't have to get too so wrapped up in thinking my work has to be the thing that gives me everything that I want.
Yeah, you hear these kids now, and which I respect, that they are calling out this toxic capitalism that's driving us into the ground.
Yeah.
You know, people were really weaponizing socialism and communism and those buzzwords to alarm people who are being, you know, motivated emotionally and through their pain. And, you know, they're, all of that stuff is being hijacked to serve a greater purpose, to keep feeding this toxic capitalism that is running the world, not just America. And it's just interesting to see people now calling it what it is, because the conversation had been framed so that if you called out capitalism as having toxic properties, that you were being anti-American. And now people are starting to say, oh man, like, this man made how much money during the pandemic? Because I didn't have any food in my house.
Right.
And I just think it's important. And I think it's admirable to hear people finally starting to say what the real, you know, where the real source is, because from that is where the white supremacy rains down on us, and the patriarchy and the sexism and the religious oppression. And it is all a function of rich people getting richer at the expense of those who are willing to bleed for being a Republican, a Democrat, you know, working for this company or that company.
Right.
And now people are finally saying, yeah, nah, I'm good.
Right. And to the point where, like you're saying, like in previous eras, it would be like, oh, you're a, what are you talking? What's all that shit you're talking? You're a socialist. You're like, oh, no, no, I'm not a commie. You're a pinko. Oh, yeah. No, no. And right. Now it's like, oh, you're a socialist. And now everybody's like, yeah. And what?
Right.
So?
Yeah. I mean, we want socialism to work for us too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like,
my senator's kids go to a good school. Right.
Yeah.
For us too.
I'm curious for you, like, I did, like, even in your special, right? You talked about how you did a lot of political commentary and that, and then you're like, I don't know if that's for me. And I think especially for people who are in the arts, performative, there's definitely an evolution of thinking like, is this a job I want to have? Is this a job I can sustain my life with, sustain a family with? Should I just take something that's more consistent? What was your sort of path through all of that to kind of arrive where you're at right now?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I've never made any money for being an activist, right? So when people... It's a thankless job, right? And it's not a job. It's just our civil duty as, you know, people who live on a planet with other people. I think it's just healthy to say, I care about you. And if you don't have food, that should matter to me, because it just, I don't know. It's just, I guess, where the definition of humanity is for me. Mm-hmm. What I had to evolve to and learn in this business is that, one, I have the privilege of doing it because I have a job in comedy that I do get paid for. And if I don't want to do this anymore, I can just go write my jokes. But there are people on the ground who do this every single day, who fight for the planet, fight for, you know, racial justice and equity, that fight for the rights of women. And those people don't get a lot of followers on Instagram. You know what I mean? But if Kim Kardashian said, I'm gonna help this lady get out of jail, everybody's like, oh my God, amazing.
Right.
But there are people who are doing that every single day, that the people who actually helped Kim Kardashian accomplish that they get overshadowed. And so I didn't want to be a part of that because I feel like that's toxic too. Mm. So I decided that I was going to use my whatever I have to shine a light on the people who do that, because they need the support. They need the economic support and they need the moral support, because it's a really hard job to fight for stuff. And that I would continue my advocacy and activism through my art. Mm-hmm. And so I'll write the jokes about this, but I am in no way equipped nor informed enough to talk about some of the things that people who, this is their expertise.
Right.
And I just felt like I was in the way and I wanted to get out the way. The other thing is that people are exhausting, as I said in there. It's hard to fight for people that you hate.
Right.
I'm like, I want to turn around. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, I can't stand y'all. Like, you guys are the worst. You damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, if I say something, why are you saying something? Why are you talking for us? If I don't say anything, why are you not saying anything?
Silent, yeah.
So I just decided that I was going to redirect my energy and I was going to put it in my scripts and I'm going to put it in my writing. I'm going to put it in my jokes and the movies that I write and the TV shows that I make. I'm going to get out of the way And I'm going to let those people who do what they do. And anytime I have any power or visibility, I'm going to shine a light on them.
Yeah. And I could, you could tell, in, especially like in your special, I really loved how you gave everyone a lower third. Like no one was just anonymous or just a, like a fig, like back wallpaper or nothing. You're like, no, this is this, who this person, this is the name of this group, even if they're performing on the street. That was just a, you know, I, and again, you could see that permeate through your work. So yeah, that's
really I appreciate that you noticed that, because that was something that I had to vocalize. I was like, you know, those people are important. And this is one, the people that look like this don't get to be on HBO Max or Netflix with frequency.
Right.
So this is their opportunity to shine. Give them a name.
Yeah. Now you're platforming them, and now hundreds of thousands of people will see a name and be like, oh, I thought that that group was fly. Let me look them up. And really commendable.
Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about some people who are bringing prisoners' rights to the attention of people who don't normally pay attention to that. And that is the January 6th snowflakes, who just can't even like process how they're being treated in prison.
Right.
And, you know, like you look at the Tucker Carlson propaganda documentary, and like that seems to be the underlying idea there, is like there's a political war on white people, when it's actually like there's a law that says you can't try and kill your congressman and vice president. Huh. But they seem confused.
Yo, they're fucked up. And look, that's what whiteness will do to you sometimes. You get a little bit of accountability and the wheels fucking completely blow off, because two of these fucking clowns who are in there, they're trying to get, they're like trying to file a motion for bail, because they're like, we can't, this place is terrible. Now, I'm not here to say that prison is a good place to be, or that I necessarily advocate for prisons in general. But in this narrow context, there's just something really rich to me about these entitled fucking wannabe rebellion fuckers acting like this is just too much. So they've written a letter. This is part of their motion, where they said things like this, and the complaints are all over the place. They said, quote, we are compelled to alert the world of the capitalized D for whatever reason of the diabolical conditions in this quote unquote correctional facility, which continues to crush all of its detainees. We are political prisoners on American soil who have been unjustly and unfairly incarcerated. And it goes on to say, all because of our political affiliation.
Oh shit. So they just like looked at how they voted? They just looked how they voted and put them in prison? I mean, that is pretty fucked up.
Interesting, if that's true. And they go on with their sort of pseudo victimhood rant about how they would rather be in Guantanamo Bay. They say, we hereby make the following request. Let us spend our precious and limited days in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Oh, sure, sir. Okay, you clearly don't know the human rights violations that occur, but go ahead. Yeah, you might like that. And they go on to say, like, you know, if we're going to be treated like enemies of the country, this, that, and the other. And then they make other claims about, like, mice or exploding toilets and mistreatment from guards, which is, I'll be fair, that's pretty normal. I think that is something that people do regularly complain about, so that's valid. But then they go on to list some other shit that just tries to sound like they're just trying to get sympathy. Because, you know, they're just not built for the prison system in general. This one of the defendants, the lawyer says, quote, Ryan is regularly discriminated against for being white. He is forced to endure disgusting racial animus and slurs regularly. The jail also prevents him from having reasonable access to reading materials while simultaneously streaming anti-white messages and critical race theory propaganda across his tablet. This is psychologically damaging. Staff wear political clothing with BLM, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, and the Vote Democrat on it. I don't know why it says the Vote Democrat, but that's the horrors of the world they're in. Truly horrific.
So, you know what? It's so funny, because some of those people went there on private jet, right? They went on a private jet. The insurrection. What's the quote, when you're accustomed to privilege, equality feels like oppression?
Yeah, absolutely. They're like, the service around here is terrible.
Right.
The room service sucks. My tablet, I'm forced to. What the fuck? Are they talking about a tablet computer?
They're playing,
like, they have iPads?
They're playing reruns of Living Single on my tablet. This is critical race theory.
Remember that guy that was requesting vegan fare? He was like, he's a vegan.
The shaman. Yo. And he got it.
The shaman. And he did get it. Right. And you know what's funny? It's like, they're not equipped for that, those prisons, and neither are these 14-year-old black kids that get sentenced to prison, and neither are, you know, the white kids, right. Like that white young boy that went to prison for having marijuana before it became legal and got a life sentence, whose mother has been fighting throughout the country trying to get her son freed. And so it's like, you're not equipped for prison. These are the things that you rally for when you are home. These are the things that lock them up, put them in jail. You know, this is what you advocated for. So what's wrong, son? Why are you not? Why are you not like?
Where's that energy?
Where's that? Keep that energy. Right. Exactly. And, you know, I think also that I speak about this, the lack of education, because you can be rich and not be and be dumb as a doorknob. The lack of education in this country continues to be the greatest threat to our freedom and democracy. You have these people who are being rallied emotionally because they hate immigrants, they hate people of color, they hate black people, they hate women, they hate trans people, they hate gay people. And now here comes your messiah that is just validating all of those and also irritating and agitating the wound that you feel because you think that these people are trying to take away what they've been taken away from you. Right. And so there's this mass hysteria amongst those people that they're willing to kill, die. I mean, they're the children from Lord of the Flies. Look at them. They were planning to murder these people. And so now you're in jail where you're supposed to be, because that's what people who do stuff like that, that's where they go. And now you're seeing the conditions of the people who have had to endure that, who've been unjustly imprisoned, who didn't, you know, now you're seeing our world and you don't like it. You don't like it outside and you don't like it inside. And I think it's fabulous. My stepfather's from Cuba. He was a political prisoner. I say, send them, give them their request. Let them go over there so that they can see what's happening over there.
Right.
And that'll give them some perspective.
Right. That's like parenting. When I told my mom I wanted to run away, she's like, okay, well then pack your shit and then you can go outside and then live on the street. Cause that's what you want. Right. That's what come on now. Keep it up. Keep up the energy. Here's your backpack. You need a pillow. And I'm like, I don't want to run away. She's like, that's what I thought.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I tried to take my video game. She was like, hold on, bitch. That's mine. That's my
bag. Right. Oh, you paid for that?
Okay. you take one outfit.
Right. Oh, I don't think you paid for that Police Academy handheld video game.
Yeah.
No. They had a Police Academy handheld
video game? I loved that shit. It was like my shit. And I didn't even know how to play it. I just loved the movie because I just like Michael Winslow as a kid.
Yeah.
So I was like, give me the Police Academy game. And it's terrible at it.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And speaking of, you know, lack of education being an issue in this country. So we're starting to see that American kids now more than ever don't know where food comes from. Ages 4 to 7 in particular, like think cheese, bacon, hot dogs, chicken nuggets, shrimp and hamburgers come from plants. Which I guess like some hamburgers do. Maybe that like broke their brain.
I think the thing that like sort of this study points to is they said there's two big things contributing to kids sort of not being as on top of shit as maybe in previous years is that A, like more than ever now, less kids live near or on farms. So like agriculture culture is not really around as much in front of kids, like just by osmosis getting into their heads. And also that there's such an emphasis now from like the educational system to tell kids like what to eat versus where food comes from. It's basically been like, you need a balanced diet. You should be eating this. You shouldn't be eating this, rather than this is how our food is cultivated and made. And I mean, I think that definitely, that tracks on some level, but they even asked to ask, you know, kids to categorize food based on animal-based or plant-based. And almost half of the kids thought that French fries came from animals.
Right.
Not even knowing like that shit's a potato cut up and fried, family.
Oh, but
yeah, I know, Jack. Yeah. Oh, news alert for you. But the other thing they say is from parents not really having conversations with their kids about where meat comes from. And also, I think given the state of the earth and pollution and how more people are confronting their diets, that some adults have like a more strained relationship with like meat consumption. So they're kind of like in this weird space of not really talking about it or not knowing. But I'm just thinking, yeah, it feels like everything. We're not having the right conversations. And some of us, it's just too uncomfortable, it seems, I guess.
That's so sad. It feels so you know, like if you think about what is being taught in schools, like they're not learning geography anymore. That got cut. You know, like history is very, the history books are pretty sad that they're giving the kids that they're not, when they're taught civic studies, they don't really understand and respect farmers because so much political agenda goes into curriculum now because whoever the superintendent is at whatever school, they're monitoring what curriculum they're going to use at this school. We're arguing about critical race theory, which is college curriculum, and somehow got hijacked into, you know, grammar school education. But it's interesting to see the manifestation of the lack of quality of education that our children are receiving, and the elite people who have a lot of money who can send their kids to these private schools, they're not learning it either. Like, you know, they're just in a safer environment, according to them. You know, they have uniforms. But the truth is that because that whole, you know, my son went to a college prep school and they prepare them for the college that's like the next step of that prep school. So they just keep the rich people going, whatever. And Omar was able to go to that because he had to think his way into that school. But it's just like if you think about the quality of education in this country, it's no surprise that children don't know where meat is coming. They're getting their education from Netflix, you know, like right. They're getting their education from watching television. And it's just really sad to think that a bunch of kids don't know where food comes from, because it's really hard to explain to kids that, yes, if you eat meat, that some people believe that it's to be of service for people. But the way it's been abused and the way that it's been, the animals have been mistreated. How do you sit down and tell somebody,
right?
You know,
yeah. Right. It's like, you want to see a slaughterhouse video? Like, I mean, are you really trying? I mean, we can educate you, but, and I think that's another thing that parents are trying to be like, I don't know how quickly to introduce a small child to the concept of slaughter.
Yeah.
And to eat things. But I don't know. I think about like my own upbringing. And I was raised in a house where my parents sort of were guided by the philosophy of like, well, if the kid has a question, we're going to answer directly. Like, don't fucking start creating weird, like, you know, don't water shit down. And even if I give you a straight answer, it doesn't connect, then chew on that for a little bit. So like as a kid, I was always just being like, yeah, chicken. It's like I'm eating like just doing that kind of shit, knowing like, oh, that's what this is. Bacon is a pig. Or things like that. But I'm curious if, like, I don't know at what age any of y'all were, like, ever confused about where food came from. Or you're always sort of, it's just something that you know. They're like, yeah, that shit comes from there. That's how we live.
My father's a chicken farmer.
Oh.
My stepfather. So we knew, which is why I stopped eating meat early, because I would make friends with a with a little chicken. And I'd be like, my brother was a devil. My brother was like, yeah, you know who that is? Like, you know, he was just the worst person on the planet. That's one thing about coming from like an immigrant family, because, and working people, they have a respect for other people who work. So if you want to know, like, you'd be like, where does that rice come from? You want to know where that rice comes from?
Right.
A whole bunch of people go out there to that's like my house. Like, there are people working right now while you sitting up here watching your little television show
out
in that hot, because I was in Florida and it was hot, sweating. And so I always knew where, you know, like I remember, you know, my ex's mom worked at a towel mill and made towels. So I was a teenager. So I was just like, I always had a sensibility about where things came from, because they're usually made by the people who have to work really hard so that all the other people can have what they need.
Right.
So I just don't understand why you want to sugarcoat that.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a way that you don't have to get into the, you know, the minutia of slaughtering an animal or things like that, but be like, this is where it comes from. Things don't just appear. It's, right. It's typically born out of someone else's labor, and that's why we have to respect shit. But yeah, I think, again, when you look at sort of what kids learn now, and I don't know if it's really necessarily an indictment on the education system, because clearly there are gaps there, but just like things are changing, and I think on some level we're just more and more disconnected from the fact that we rely on each other as well, like that it's like everything's not a given like that.
I also think that the attitude towards like farmers is like that towards veterans in this country and soldiers, like everybody loves them, right. But do they really? You know what right. I mean? Yeah. It's like this attitude about it's so American to love the farmers. But then when they, you know, they need water, they're having a drought, or they don't have people, all these people who were talking about the immigrants taking their jobs, they did right. these mass deportations. And then in California, you saw the farmers were like, we don't have people that want to do it. Where are all those people who said the immigrants wanted their jobs? Why are you not?
Where's that energy? That's missing right. energy here because, mm-hmm. Sounds like you realize how hard it is. And now and what's oddly enough, it's like, those like laborers that work in agriculture in the Central Valley, they have the highest fucking vaccination rate of like anywhere. You know right. what I mean? And yeah. it's just wild how people just, again, all these myths and dumb stereotypes that go through people's heads just keep us with a very yeah. limited worldview.
Just disconnected from how the world actually works, disconnected from where the food comes from who makes that food, from what a vaccine is, from why you're still alive, even though you had chicken pox, like,
right.
you know? All that shit. Ida, it's been such a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
You can find me right now on HBO Max. Hey. Uh-huh. And then you can also, I'm on Twitter at FunnyAIDA and on Instagram. And I'm only on there on Friday through Sunday. So
good for you.
Just so mental health.
There you go. Yeah,
there you go. That's smart. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes, nobody tweeted. I want to say because my thread right now is mainly people talking about the my special, but you know, praising it or whatever. But I thought this was funny because one woman said, "Funny Ida, my best friend makes fun of me for having conversations with her dog." But shit, he does talk back. That's my favorite tweet. And that was from Cindy Stuckey, which I thought was funny because it was like, I talk about how we white women talk to the animals.
Right.
And
right
I just thought right. that, you know, she was really, really a good sport about it.
That's so funny. Miles, it's been great co-hosting this episode with you. Where can people find you, follow you, and what's the tweet you've been enjoying?
Oh, shit. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And also check out the other show, 420 Day Fiancé, where we talk about 90 Day Fiancé. That's Sophia Alexandra and I. A tweet that I like. First one. Actually, I mean, it's one from The Daily Show from last week, but it was just so funny because the judge in that Kyle Rittenhouse case, the tweet from at The Daily Show was breaking. Judge in Kyle Rittenhouse case reveals he has adopted Kyle Rittenhouse, declares mistrial, quote, because he's my son. God, what a fucking transparent abuse of nonsense. Anyway, and the other one is from at Palmer Rachel C. Rachel Palmer tweeted, mid-20s. Smiling at strangers in bars to try and have sex. Mid-30s, smiling at strangers in the park to try and have mom friends. Yeah, life
same move. Sense. Same move. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. Some tweets I've been enjoying. Blair Saki, recent guest, tweeted, I used to have a faithful reply guy named PissFreak420. Oh. And I'm wondering if he got married or something because I haven't seen him in a while. If you're reading this, I hope you're doing well, Piss Freak. And Dr. Libido,
thank you.
At PissFreak420. Okay, I'm back. Blessings upon you, Blair. You are very sweet. And then Blair replied, Piss Freak, you're back! Thank God! Five freak. Exclamation points. Gotta love a Piss Freak.
Yeah. And it's not just a clever name.
And then Robert Schultz tweeted, did you know there's actually more sugar in fruit than in soda? Did you know I'm actually hanging on by a thread as it is? Like, I don't need to hear that shit, man. Fuck off.
Do you know I'm already?
You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes on our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might be enjoying?
Oh, man. Ida got me in a New York mood. And I just let's do a track by ESG, the great band from the Bronx. We've gone out on a few tracks of theirs before. I think UFO might be one of their more notable ones because it's been sampled so many times in rap and hip hop. But this one is called The Beat. And like all their songs, it's just like raw. The rhythm section's really dope. I love the vocals and a great way to start your week. So this is ESG with The Beat.
All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever the hell you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this Monday morning, but we're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.